Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Sinn Féin has launched a new immigration policy which seeks to, an end to the two-tier system favouring Ukrainians and calls for an audit of services before asylum seekers are moved into any area. The document, entitled A Fair System That Works, calls for more countries to be added to the safe countries list and for deportation orders to be followed up. I'm joined now by Piers Doherty, who's Sinn Féin spokesperson on finance. And in a moment, I'll speak with Professor Siobhan Mullally, who's director of the Irish Centre for Human Rights at the University of Galway. You're both very welcome. Piers Doherty, I might come to you first of all. I don't know if you heard the interview with Minister Eamon Ryan, because he seems to have cast a doubt on the legality of Sinn Féin's policy, new policy document on immigration already. Can I ask you about your plans to end the preferential treatment for Ukrainian refugees? Eamon Ryan said he didn't think treating Ukrainians under the Temporary Protection Directive as the same as other IPA candidates, that that might not be possible under EU law. Now, did you get legal advice to suggest that it is possible?
Well, first of all, Eamon Ryan hasn't obviously read the document properly, because what we've made very clear, and we've been saying this since last year, is the Temporary Protection Directive comes to an end in March of 2026. And what the government now need to do is prepare for that. What Sinn Féin are doing is outlining exactly what we would do. And that is that we need to treat them like anybody else seeking international protection. And they would apply in terms of to the IPO offices.
Okay. Only when that ends, is that right, that directive?
Yes.
And if there's in relation to elongate that, would Sinn Féin row in with the elongation?
No, or? We believe that at this stage the emergency is over in terms of the mass amount of people that moved very, very quickly at the start of the brutal invasion of Ukraine, and now we have to allow people to go through the proper processes.
So the emergency is over in Ukraine?
No, I didn't say that. I said the emergency in relation to the mass movement of people that moved very, very quickly at the start of the brutal invasion is now over. That was what was required, where you needed temporary protection, because you wouldn't have the ability to process the numbers of people that were moving across Europe in the time. Now things are settled in terms of the mass movement of people, and now you need to plan for a proper process.
Yeah, the numbers are reduced, but the numbers are still significant. You also say if they are from a part of Ukraine that is unsafe, they could apply for international protection. What part of Ukraine is safe?
We haven't said that any part of Ukraine is safe.
That's the implication of what you're saying. If they come from a part of Ukraine that is unsafe, the implication is that there are parts of Ukraine that are safe. So which part is safe?
Okay. If you would let me now finish my sentence, I'll explain. We haven't said that any part of Ukraine is safe, but what we would hope is that when the Temporary Protection Directive comes to an end, that all Ukraine would be safe. We would hope that that would be the situation and that we would have peace there. But what we are saying is that the government should allow for partial designation of states where there are, in Ukraine or elsewhere, it may not be Ukraine, but in elsewhere, where there are states that are partially safe, and that happens in other European countries. Or it may be a case where a state is safe for women or men, but not for women, or vice versa.
Okay, but you're accepting that all of Ukraine at this point is unsafe, are you?
What we're laying out very, very clear, when the Temporary Protection Directive comes to an end, that nobody will be returned unsafely to any place where there is war or persecution. That is the international premises on the basis of which our international protection is based on. There is very strict criteria.
And specifically on Ukraine, or will you say to me that nowhere in Ukraine is safe at the moment?
We are not arguing that, and that hasn't been tested, Cormac, with respect, and that's not what we're saying. But of course, when the temporary protection ends in March of next year, if Ukraine is safe, or parts of it is safe to go back to, then that is obviously what will happen.
What if there's still a war with Russia?
If it's not safe, then what they should do is they should apply for international protection like anybody else coming from any other war-torn region in the country. And for those who are working, they should apply for work permits. It creates a pathway for people to actually apply.
Can I return to the first question? Have you got legal advice to say that if and when the Temporary Protection Directive is at an end, have you got advice to say that even then it's allowable under EU law, your new policy?
Cormac, that's a, with respect to Eamon Ryan, that's a ridiculous statement. These are people who, at that point, if there is no temporary protection, that means that there would be Ukrainians who would have no protection under international law, and therefore what they would fit into is the system that applies internationally, which is international protection. Now, we have set out very clearly, not just in relation to the two-tier system, but also in terms of ending the profiteering, but crucially what we've set out in terms of our fair document today and a significant intervention from ourselves is how you actually engage, consult and listen to communities and how you make sure that no new centres are going into communities that don't have the resources to support them. I didn't hear the interview earlier on.
That's happening already.
Yes, I didn't hear the interview earlier on, but I heard somebody tell me that he claimed that. That is absolutely nonsense. I'll tell you that I come and represent a community where we've seen large number of both IPAS and Ukrainians in our county. Indeed, we've the third largest outside of Cork and Dublin in our county. I engage directly. When I get the call from the community engagement team or the so-called community engagement team, Cormac, will I tell you what happens? They tell me that a contract has been signed. I ask them, did you do an assessment in terms of medical needs? Is there GP facilities? They say no. I ask them, do you do assessment in relation to educational needs? They say no. The reality is that this government has one criteria, and that is the availability of premises, which is based on profit, which is based on greed.
So perhaps I can update you, and I think the government would say they have improved community engagement of late in recent months. He said, in regarding Coolock, for example, that the community engagement team engaged on March the 20th, April the 8th, April the 16th, the 8th of May, the 6th of July, and since, he said. And he also said that audits do occur and did occur in Coolock, for example. So how would your audit of community services be different?
First of all, if you listen to the people of Coolock, if you go out and engage with the people of Coolock and ask them, was there meaningful engagement with the community of Coolock, they will tell you very clearly and very bluntly that that did not happen. That's the first thing.
How would your engagement be different is the question.
Well, two things would happen. First of all, there would be a standardised approach where people can actually make submissions and make their views heard in relation to the location of a new centre. But most importantly, there would be an assessment carried out by the state itself in relation to an area, is it suitable for a centre? Taking on board issues like the levels of deprivation that exist in an area, taking on board issues like GP service, like educational service, like transport links, like the issues in terms of unemployment and all of those issues that would be taken on board.
Services are inadequate, what would you do?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
If the audit says that services in that locality are inadequate, what would you do?
Well, then, of course, that a centre should not be located in an area that doesn't have adequate services.
Can I put this to you? So many of the communities across the country, including ones in your own county, have said that services are inadequate. You could be left with no location.
Cormac, first of all, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. We have the Pubble HP Index, which actually looks at breaking down not just counties, but parts of counties and parts of regions in terms of deprivation scores across the state. It is very clear where deprivation exists, and it also is clear where affluence exists within
that's
the state.
That's different to what you're suggesting.
No, it's not. Cormac, with respect, if you read my document and the document we published, it is very clear on in terms of the criteria that we would take the HP deprivation Pubble scores into account. So it is very clear. Mm-hmm. How do you do this?
Can I finish my point
yeah, with respect?
Yeah, okay.
Can
I respect? I'll clarify, yeah.
So this is very clear. You asked me the question, if the services do not exist in the community, what do you do then? It's simple. You do not put additional pressure on that community. You do not put a centre into that community. Are there places in the state that don't have the levels of deprivation, such as areas like Coolock and elsewhere? Of course there are. They are outlined in the Pubble Index. And secondly, where you plan to put services in place and where you can't put additional resources in to actually help those areas, then people will have the opportunity to be consulted, to be listened to be engaged with, and then it will be up for IPAS to make the final decision.
Oh, okay, can I move on actually, because we're running out of time. You say in your document you want to end private profiteering and move to state-run accommodation. Do you mean end profiteering or end private suppliers altogether in terms of accommodation?
So what we have at the minute is you have basically a system that is led by private operators that are looking for profit, obviously, and nothing else is taken on board in relation to the location of these centres. That has to come to an end. We can't be allowing multimillionaires, and some of them who have been created as a result of this this emergency, to be dictating where these centres are located. So in our proposals, we would be moving to a majority state-owned system, where the state actually owns the premises, runs the premises, and there's huge savings in that because the cost per individual.
Private supply.
The majority would be would be state owned, and that's the very clear difference between ourselves and government. Government have outlined a plan that has majority private for profit system.
Before I turn to Siobhan, under Sinn Féin's proposals that you'd move to state owned mostly, that would reduce supply. You want to end the private use as well. And you want more consultation, which would elongate the process. Could that not make the situation worse? You're elongating the process and you're reducing supply potentially.
Cormac, with respect, I don't know how you come up with that phrase. We're talking about a significant state intervention to actually have state-owned premises, and therefore that doesn't reduce supply, that actually increases supply. And also there is a piece within the document which talks about the efficiencies within the system, and that is crucial because at the minute it takes about 18 months for a decision to be made in relation to the standard application. We need to triple the number of people who are working in the IPO and IPAT to speed up those processes. Why? Because two-thirds of people who come to the state, according to the decisions that were made last year, are actually rejected. And it is important that those decisions are made quicker so that they can be safely returned home to the place of origin, but also for those who are fleeing war and persecution, that those decisions can be made speedily so that they have clarity in terms of their status and they can move on with their lives in a new nation that is welcoming.
Well, stay with me, Piers Starty. I'm joined by Professor Siobhan Mullally, who's Director of the Irish Centre for Human Rights at the University of Galway. Professor Mullally, you're very welcome. What's your assessment? You've been looking through the Sinn Féin policy document from a human rights perspective.
Good afternoon, Cormac. Well, I think it's welcome and important to have a stated commitment that there will be human rights compliance that's stated in the policy document. And I think what's important then is to see how that would be implemented. We've seen multiple reports, including the White Paper on Ending Direct Provision, the Advisory Group reports, the Day report, all committing to moving away from the for-profit system, which clearly has not worked. But the implementation continues to be slow and to be weak. We've had the new government comprehensive accommodation strategy in April, again committing to an expansion of state-owned accommodation. That is the direction that we need to go on, that we cannot continue to rely on commercial operators.
Mm-hmm. What about
but unfortunately,
the proposal?
The implementation and progress
has been slow. Yeah. What about the proposal from Sinn Féin for the list of safe countries to be expanded and a list of partially safe countries to be looked at as well? What do you make of that?
I think that's very problematic. We know that there are already problems with listing safe countries where particular individuals, LGBT persons, persons from particular minorities or political dissidents may continue to be at serious risk. And this puts an added burden on them. Concerns have already been raised with regard to some of the countries on the existing list and the recent expansion by government. Expanding that further really is not helpful or useful and is not good practice. What we need to see is a comprehensive asylum determination system that is fair, that gives timely responses and doesn't assume generalised safety, because there can be very serious risks for individuals and that needs to be recognised.
Okay, and my final question to you would be about ending the favourable treatment for Ukrainians and Sinn Féin's call for those who are from an unsafe part of Ukraine to be to apply for international protection status. Do you think that that's okay, even if the temporary or when the temporary directive comes to an end?
Well, the temporary protection directive remains in force with regard to Ukrainians. It was a very good measure that was taken the first time it was invoked. At EU level, it wasn't used previously, for example, with regard to the Syrian refugee crisis. It is a good measure that provides a degree of security and safety and certainty. We do need to plan ahead if that comes to an end, but we're certainly not anywhere near there at the moment. We have an ongoing war of aggression, a serious armed conflict that has led to millions of people being displaced. And we need to focus on ensuring that we can continue to provide protection. If we come to a situation where the conflict is ending and we are not at the, in that situation now, then we would certainly need to plan ahead to ensure that there is the transition period.
Pierce Doherty, I'll give you a very brief response to any of the points made by the professor there.
Look, I agree with the professor. That's exactly what we're talking about here, that people should, that those who are have got temporary protection, that they're not clear what happens after March 2026. What we're saying is, let's start the process. Let them apply for work permits. Let them apply for international protection. And of course, where they're fleeing war and persecution, they will be granted the status to remain here, as is absolutely right. In relation to the application of partial designation of safe countries, just to make this point, that is actually the point. There are some countries that are not safe because of maybe sexual orientation, or it may be because of gender issues, but they're safe for other people. And it's about allowing for partial designation, which means that if you are somebody who are coming from one of those countries, which may be because you're a female, you can actually claim that it is unsafe for you. And as I said, this is about trying to resource the system, about trying to speed up the system and trying to make it fair for people who are applying here, who have the right to stay here, but also for those that don't, that we don't wait 18 months, that we're able to make decisions faster and we're able to return safely.
Pierce Doherty of Sinn Féin, thank you very much indeed. Professor Siobhan Mullally, who's Director of the Irish Centre for Human Rights at University of Galway, thank you as well.